It's Sunday, the 3rd of September, 2006. Welcome to another edition of G.L. Horton's Stage Page Podcast. Today we have two more readings of monologues by G.L. Horton. If you'd like to be on the show, all you have to do is record your own favorite and send it to glhorton@podomatic.com, along with your name and whatever information you consider important. We'll do the rest. Today, JoBen talks about the quandary of ending homelessness, and Valerie Sedano tells us about the insubstantial Charlie. In between, GL and Larry Stark talk about political theater. And now, JoBen.
End homelessness? Why? Why would you want to do that? I mean, none of us wants the mentally ill to be wandering around the streets without medicine or shelter. We want to cure disease. We want to feed the hungry, clean up crime in the parks, and littering. But homelessness? Whatever happened to freedom? Why should a person have to live in a house, buy a condo, rent a room, or bunk in a charity shelter that's like a prison? If someone wants to live on a park bench and can do that without hurting anybody, I say more power to them. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You know, we could afford to give all sorts of help to the deserving if we didn't mind giving help to the undeserving, too. A shocking percentage of our social services budget goes to figuring out ways to deny aid to the bums, a process that dehumanizes both the bums and the gatekeepers. You can feed a heck of a lot of bums on the salary of one bureaucrat.
Thank you, Joe. Remember, the text of that monologue and hundreds of others can be found at stagepage.info, and they are all free for students and actors doing auditions. And now, G.L. Horton and Larry Stark will comment on the state of political theater.
Well, I was not present at these guests, but reference on political theater, which I, how I would characterize it. But
I think
you
it
were.
Was called. I think it was called The Artist is Citizen, and it was about the public function as opposed to, say, the economic function or the artistic. Purely arts for art's sake function of theaters, both institutionally and for individual artists.
Okay.
That's a little pompous sounding, but it's a problem in everybody's lives, particularly for playwrights, of course, because all politics is local, and you write for your local audience, and if you're not able to talk to your local audience because there is no functioning political theater on the particular level where you're trying to live, then there's a whole aspect of what it means to be a playwright that's not available to you.
Well, the reason I'm curious is I don't pay a lot of attention to local politics, for one thing, but I think that national politics gets an awful lot of airing through satire, comedy clubs, through improv. And I was wondering why you think, you explained to me a few minutes ago, why it's different from plays.
Well, plays tend to be an occasion on which you get together with a bunch of other people and you explore the emotional trip, the emotional journey and consequences of certain actions. So it's, how ought we to live? How should we treat each other? A lot of it, of course, is how can we screw each other up? And what are the consequences of that? And focus of that could be psychological. The main focus of American theater is psychological. What did your parents do to you that made you dysfunctional?
Yeah.
And you realize that, and then somehow or other it gets worked out.
But
and the people in the audience identify with that and have a cathartic experience that gives them some perspective on their own lives. But we also act as citizens. And the question on the stage could be, how ought we to negotiate the circumstances of our lives, which is politics. Okay?
Right.
Who gets what share of the pie? And how ought you to feel about that? And who is our neighbor? And how do we relate to them? What is the, if you have a motive driving your own life, what is the relationship of how that works out to how you interact with other people in the world? If you have to drive a Hummer to do what you're doing, how much karma are you collecting?
What just ran through my mind is that there's a play by Ibsen called The Enemy of the People, which at the time I thought people thought was political theater.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little hard to understand these days if you think of it in those terms.
Why?
I must admit that I'm not quite certain I can remember a production on stage that really made me understand that politics was involved.
Oh, well, I saw it at the National Theater, I believe. I hope it was an Enemy of the People. I'm pretty sure. with Ian McKellen in the title role. And it was pretty clear that it was political, and that part of the reason that the politics of it were as destructive as they were had to do with the way his dysfunctional family related to one another and how they tended to polarize everything so that it became impossible to negotiate how to deal with this terrible situation where what is supposed to be healthful baths are actually poisonous.
Yes.
And the economics of this of the community depend on poisoning people while pretending to do them good, which I think is a pretty elementary thing that happens in most societies.
Metaphorically, I think you just described the Republican Party,
but in order to solve such problems, you have to have a basic trust that you are your brother's keeper, and that we are neighbors together, and there's got to be some way to work this out so that we all survive and thrive, rather than that we thrive on the other people's.
The other play that I remember having experience with was The Crucible, which arrived when I was actually not seeing plays, but I heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that the playwright was told you can have any of your plays done in Belgium at the big fair except that one. This was apparently what the State Department told him. Or, if they do that one, we won't give you a visa so you can go see it.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't understand, even then, anything about the obvious political overtones of McCarthyism, which are obvious in the play to me now.
I think they're only obvious if you were told that that's the particular situation to which he was responding.
No.
Because the kind of things that happened with McCarthyism happen regularly in human experience. And the parallel between the Salem witch hunts and McCarthyism are not any closer than the parallels, than similar parallels, one of which I should be able to think of if we talk enough.
No, but the specific thing, and really, I saw the play about four times before this was obvious to me.
Mm-hmm.
But someone, a director obviously, underlined the one particular thing that people were being asked to prove they were not witches by ratting on other people.
Yes.
And that is something that happened in the McCarthyism trials so obviously that if you put the play and the transcripts of the hearings together, this is obvious. But I kept seeing it until the point of revelation as something about witches. As a historical play, as a psychological play. The central character seemed to me to be interested in himself and in protecting his wife and his reputation.
Well, it's also about his relationship to truth. And is his relationship to truth more important than his own life? And that's a pretty extreme position,
mm-hmm.
because if you're not a believer in some kind of an afterlife, the preference for truth above your own life does not seem to be a reasonable one. But he makes it. He believes that. I mean, he says, up to the point, he says, yes, I would rather live because my life is valuable. And okay, I'll confess. As long as they don't have to implicate anybody else. But when the time comes to sign the paper, he cannot put his name to it. He cannot make his life be about a lie when he's dead.
So his reputation
after death is more important to him than his life itself.
The situation you've just described sounds to me like psychology rather than politics.
Or it sounds like the basic plot of almost any tragedy. Yes, which is that there is at some point in which some principle that your life embodies becomes more important to you than your life itself. And so you either risk your life and lose it, or you kill yourself, which is another common ending for tragedies. But what is the political part of the play is the part about when you manage to reconcile yourself to the community, or the community does not cast you out, but continues to negotiate with you, so that the partial truth that you have glimpsed is then embodied and worked into the whole, so that the community becomes richer for the different points of views that it manages to encompass. And maybe it learns it in the course of the play, and all are reconciled, and it's a comedy with a happy ending, or maybe it learns it through the death of somebody that after their death is recognized to be valuable, that the community has damaged itself by casting out. Now, I think that part of it, that's the universal part that's made this play so popular, The Crucible, so popular all the way around the world and over such a long period of time.
Yeah,
that you see the effect of a community that polarizes to the extent that it is projecting, like a paranoia, enmity onto people. And at that point, they have to say, you're either with us or you're against us.
True.
And the only way you, if the only way you can maintain your own integrity and identity is to say, well, I guess I'm against you then,
right.
And give up your life or give up your reputation or whatever. Then you have the basic tragic plot.
Have you written an obviously political play?
Oh, dozens of them.
Okay.
I mean, I write political satire, I write tragedy, I write the peculiar form of tragedy wherein the character makes the other choice, decides that they would be rather have a reputation, even if that reputation is built on a lie. And some of the characters that I was attracted to, such as Victoria Woodhull, who I first came across as a feminist heroine because she ran for president in 1872 on a platform of equal rights and free love. So I wrote a play about her, but I discovered in the course of writing that play that, in fact, that was only what she did up till the age of 30-something. After which she had a spiritual crisis, reformulated herself as a born-again Christian, and married a rich English lord, and went around suing everybody for libel who quoted the things she said when she was a radical feminist.
Okay.
So I trace her life, and you say to yourself, well, was that a good choice? Well, it's a pretty funny choice on one level. So it does have its humor, but in the end you say, how could someone with so much potential want to turn themselves into such a boring person?
And boring persons are not very good theaters.
Well, it is. Watching somebody turn himself into a boring person
that
is a
can
pretty
be fascinating,
exciting,
yes.
It's pretty exciting even in the theater. You say, no, please don't say that. What happened to the splendid woman you were?
Thanks, GL and Larry. Larry is still looking for short reviews, quick takes, and what you saw at the theater last night. Send your reviews to larry@theatermirror.com. And now, local actress Valerie Serrano relates a tale of Charlie.
The ghost I saw? He looks like his pictures. This was a rather famous ghost, which is why I can't be sure it really happened. I may have been influenced. Anyway, the famous ghost was Charlie the stuntman killed in a fall. Charlie was said to haunt the studio where he died and to show up sometimes in the rushes. One of the crew showed me a bit of the film he had of Charlie, this kind of transparent gunman, and I had a nice shiver out of it. But I don't think for a moment I believed in him. Trick photography, I thought. But then a day or two later I was late changing. Most of the lights were out, and I was on the way to the exit when I walked by a man in a costume. Standing in the shadow, familiar, but then I realized where I'd seen him. Charlie, in the film? I stopped dead. I couldn't move. I swear my hair stood straight up on my head. Of course, by the time I'd recovered enough to turn around, there was nothing there. I wasn't terrified exactly. I never thought I was in physical danger. It was just eerie, uncanny. Just remembering it, Charlie gives me goosebumps.
That was local actress Valerie Sedano reading Charlie. That's it for another show. If you liked what you heard, let us know at glhorton@podomatic.com. Better yet, let your friends know. And now would be a great time to take a look at the cornucopia of scripts from less than a minute to a full three acts, available on glstagepage.info. Surf on over. Until next week,